Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The Center for Responsive Politics projects that total spending on next week's elections will reach a whopping $5.2 billion, making it the most expensive midterm ever. Those funds are being spent by candidates, political parties, PACs, super PACs, and nonprofits around the country. Democrats are either outspending or keeping up with Republicans in competitive races, even in conservative areas. So where is all of the money coming from, and how is it being spent? Today, we're joined by Sheila Krumholtz, Executive Director of the Center for Responsive Politics, a nonprofit that tracks the effects of money and lobbying on elections and public policy. Hi, Sheila. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. We're also joined by Paul Blumenthal, a reporter at the Huffington Post. Paul's work has appeared on PBS's Frontline and MSNBC. He previously worked as the senior writer for the Sunlight Foundation, and they also do an incredible job of following the money. Hi, Paul. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Great to have you on. Well, Sheila, I want to start off with you. You're the executive director of the Center for Responsive Politics, and you all do such a fantastic job of following the money. I think 2 months ago, I saw a report that said $3.2 billion. So when we were doing research for the show, I was kind of shocked that it's now $5.2 billion. I mean, every election, it's just getting worse. The money just continues to flow into these campaigns.
It does, and each cycle we are getting tired of saying it's another record-breaking cycle for spending. But this cycle is really different. We're seeing a much larger leap from one midterm to the next. So $3.8 billion was spent in 2014. So to project a $5.2 billion projected total cost for this cycle is truly astonishing, and we think that $5.2 billion is conservative, so it may in fact go north of that.
Well, since you've been following the money for so long, what really strikes you about this midterm and the $5.2 billion that we're expected will be spent on all of this?
Well, the numbers that leap out at us are the fundraising for House candidates in particular. So already this cycle, we have seen spending for House candidates near $1.3 billion. So this is just through the, October 17th or October 15th through the pre-general reports. And this is favoring Democrats by quite a bit this cycle as compared to last. So Democratic advantage, particularly in the House, and a winnowing of money spent by the party committees, the kind of traditional party committees, are declining, and the outside spending committees, those super PACs and nonprofits, are really becoming more and more of a substantial extension of the past party machinery.
And Paul, what really strikes you? You recently wrote a piece called Dark Money Groups Will Have to Disclose Their Donors in Time for the Midterms.
Oh, yeah, I did write about that. There was a court case that should have said that, you know, that their outcome was that dark money groups would be required to disclose their donors. That hasn't really played out that way as these groups have continued to spend on elections. But, you know, what stands out for me in that area, especially super PAC spending, dark money spending, is that Democrats have really sort of reached parity with Republicans in this regard in this election, especially just in the past few weeks. We've seen gigantic contributions from Mike Bloomberg, the former Republican mayor of New York City, who is now a big Democratic Party donor, giving tens of millions of dollars to groups supporting Democrats. Just in the first 2 weeks of October. And Tom Steyer, the billionaire hedge funder from California, who is also trying to get Democrats to impeach President Trump, contributed another $9 million to his super PAC. So in past midterms, there's really sort of been a heavy lean in the big money super PAC spending supporting Republicans, and this time around we're seeing it's pretty close between the two parties in that regards. And the other thing that really stands out is the heavy small dollar donor fundraising by Democrats, which is sort of giving them this big overall majority of the money going into this election.
Well, there's a lot to talk about. Let's focus first on the dark money. And Sheila, the Center for Responsive Politics reports that about $1 billion has been spent by outside groups to influence next week's election, including $571 million on House races. We have journalists on all the time talking about the difficulty in following the money when it's dark money. And some of that dark money is becoming even darker thanks to recent IRS rule changes. Sheila, what have you all been able to uncover about dark money, where it's coming from and where it's going?
Yeah, so just to clarify first for those who may not be as familiar, when we talk about dark money, we're mostly talking about non-disclosing nonprofits that have become very political. So and nonprofits are springing up every cycle since the Citizens United decision that are not like normal social welfare organizations that are organized around issues like, you know, the Boys and Girls Club or even the NRA or Planned Parenthood. These are groups that often have very patriotic or anodyne sounding names that are seemingly extensions of a campaign or of a party, and are seemingly very political in their messaging. But they're filing as nonprofits with the IRS rather than as political committees with the FEC, presumably because that way they don't have to disclose their donors. What we've tracked so far in terms of their spending reported to the FEC, because they have to report spending where they've identified a federal candidate, is $128 million so far in dark money. As Paul says, the money is trending far more liberal this cycle than it has in any of the cycles since Citizens United. And interestingly, there's a huge growth in the portion of money being spent by partially disclosing groups. And what we mean by that is a nonprofit may be giving the money to a super PAC, so the super PAC must disclose, but we still don't know who the original donors are. So they're using super PACs, which have the facade of transparency, as a way to kind of cleanse the data of the money of that original source. And so what we've seen is back in 2014, only about 6% of the outside spending groups had partial disclosure, and that is now up to 31%. So $354 million is flowing through these groups that are basically having their cake and eating it too. They're pretending to be transparent, but we still don't know where the source of the money is coming from.
Paul, can you talk about what is involved in trying to follow the money when it's dark as a reporter?
Well, I mean, I guess what we try to do, and a lot of the time is we rely on the work of the Center for Responsive Politics, which has an entire dark money nonprofit database, is, you know, you have to go find these nonprofits if they're available. They're 990 tax forms, and you can trace back, you can find out, you know, their address, who's linked to them, who works there, who helped found the organization, and then finding out who funded them. Sometimes it's simply through these 990s you might be able to do a reverse search to find a different nonprofit that contributed to them. There are some large corporations that actually do disclose their corporate donations to political activities, including to nonprofits involved in elections, just on their websites. And there's an organization that collects that information and makes it available, I believe called the Center for Political Accountability. And, you know, in some cases, those kind of disclosures have revealed contributions from corporations like CVS Health. You know, you probably go to CVS and it's might be your local drugstore. You might not know that they have contributed to a dark money group connected to President Donald Trump. as have other large corporations that have wound up disclosing these donations, mostly due to shareholder pressure to get them to disclose what they're doing with shareholder money in politics. So, I mean, those are sort of the big things that, we do. The other thing is, you know, you find out who works there and you call people and ask.
Because Democrats are catching up to Republicans when it comes to money, over the years, we have talked a lot about the U.S. Chamber of Commerce giving a lot of money to Republicans, about Charles and David Koch's Americans for Prosperity spending so much money on Republican races. I mean, these are the groups and the people that want tax cuts for the wealthy. They want to get rid of environmental protections. I mean, they have a very clear agenda. On the Democratic side, now that they're catching up, Paul, can you name some of the groups that are spending, giving dark money, and what are their key issues?
Well, I mean, the biggest donor to Democrats, the top two right now, are Tom Steyer and Michael Bloomberg. And I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with Bloomberg. He was a Democrat, then became a Republican to run for New York City mayor, served two terms as a Republican, then became an independent and served a third term. And then after that, he has, I guess, remained an independent until recently, where he re-registered as a Democrat, and some people believe that he might be thinking of running as a Democrat in 2020, big supporter of gun control legislation. And in the past elections, he's usually split his money between the two parties, supporting Republicans who back gun control legislation, like Senator Pat Toomey in 2016, along with other Democrats. But this time around, it looks like he's spending almost exclusively, although not 100%, to support Democrats, and spending money at a very high rate. As I said, he's contributed tens of millions of dollars to super PACs just in October. And Tom Steyer would be the other one, who runs his own network of super PACs that he contributes tens of millions of dollars to, that, you know, are pushing for action on climate change, to forestall climate change, and also to impeach the president. So those are sort of the two big donors. In terms of dark money, the main group is called Majority Forward, and it's connected to a super PAC called Senate Majority PAC, which is itself connected to Senator Chuck Schumer, who is the Senate Minority Leader for the Democratic Party. And as Sheila said earlier, a lot of these groups are now sort of acting as just sort of ancillary parts of the Democratic or the Republican Party. So these groups like Majority Forward, Senate Majority PAC, really sort of operate as a part of the Democratic Party apparatus. And for the House Democrats, they have House Majority PAC, is, you know, the super PAC that sort of works with the House leadership. The Republican side, Mitch McConnell has Senate Leadership Fund, and Paul Ryan has Congressional Leadership Fund. And these are really just, it's sort of a resurrection of the soft money party money from the early 2000s that you might think about prior to the enactment of the McCain-Feingold bill. So I mean, that's sort of where the money is being spent right now, is mostly through these party super PACs and dark money groups.
It's hard to follow all of this stuff. So if you're talking about Bloomberg, who's spending $38 million to support Democrats, what kind of Democrats is he supporting? Because there are a range of Democrats running. You've got progressive Democrats. You have more corporate Democrats. And Bloomberg wrote an op-ed about his decisions, and he said that in the last election, he spent $10 million to help elect Pat Toomey, a Republican in Pennsylvania. He says, "I disagree with him on many issues, but I support that he broke with the NRA and co-wrote a bipartisan bill to close the background check loophole." And so this time he says he's supporting all Democrats, even though he disagrees with them on various issues, but he doesn't get very specific on this. You know, I mean, I think what people can't stand about the system is that this one man has so much power, $38 million, and then Tom Steyer, $51 million, Sheldon and Miriam Adelson, big-time Republicans, they're going to spend the most, about $113 million on Republicans. We'll talk about them in a minute. But, Paul, do you know what kind of Democrats is Michael Bloomberg supporting?
I mean, I think that he is supporting, you know, Democrats in close races across the board. We do know that his political preference is towards more centrist Democrats, more, you know, people that are less progressive than maybe a lot of the candidates that he's supporting in this election. But I mean, you know, as you mentioned, people are upset about the ability of people who have tens of billions of dollars of their own personal wealth to spend, you know, $100 million on elections into them. That's like cutting a $100 check or something. Right. You know, it's a drop in the bucket. And I mean, it's clearly a problem in this sort of second Gilded Age that we're living through, that we have, you know, someone like Jeff Bezos or Sheldon Adelson or Mike Bloomberg who can really just sort of take over an entire election at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, it's like a percentage of the tax cut that they got. I mean, that's what's so incredible and frustrating about the amount of money that's being spent. Paul Blumenthal is a reporter with the Huffington Post, and he writes extensively about these issues. Sheila Krumholtz is executive director of the Center for Responsive Politics, a nonprofit that tracks the effects of money and lobbying on elections and public policy. And today we're talking about money in politics. The Center for Responsive Politics projects that total spending on next week's elections will reach a whopping $5.2 billion, making it the most expensive midterm ever. And the Democrats have caught up. In other elections, they haven't raised as much as Republicans, but this time they are raising as much. So what questions do you have about money in politics? It just seems that this issue is getting worse. And later in the show, we will talk about efforts to take money out of politics. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. So we talked about Michael Bloomberg spending about $38 million to support Democrats, Tom Steyer, $51 million to Democrats. The biggest spenders so far this cycle are Sheldon and Miriam Adelson, the casino billionaires. They're shelling out more than $113 million to support Republican candidates. We just did a show about them last week. There's a great piece, and I believe it was ProPublica, about how Sheldon Adelson calls Trump on a regular basis, and his number one policy is Israel, and so far he's getting just about everything he wants on that issue. Sheila, what really stood out for you when you all did research on the money that the Adelsons are spending?
Well, the Adelsons have... as you say, long-time interests in promoting pro-Israel policy in the U.S., but he also gives in ways that are, of course, or he and Miriam give in ways that are beneficial to his significant stakes in gaming with casino operations across the globe. And he's been a long-time donor. I do think for Adelson, the you can't separate the two, but the pro-Israel policy is probably a more prominent piece of his kind of philosophy that's driving his giving. But so it's money that is going most of it is going to these outside groups because they can take unlimited sums and he can give millions of dollars at a pop. And he's also giving, you know, on down the line to party committees as well. So there's, you know, he's, as with many donors, we can't know what motivates any single donation. But he has multiple interests and a lot of interests before the federal government.
And Paul, what would you add on Sheldon Adelson and the money he's spending?
I mean, I think if you had a show about this already, you probably covered. I was going to bring up that ProPublica article, I believe, by Justin Elliott that, you know, talks about how Adelson has gotten pretty much everything he wants. You know, he supports the far right wing government of Israel. And, you know, he got Trump to move the embassy to Jerusalem, which was a long-time project. The Trump administration essentially has given up any, even like the pretense of working with the Palestinians in any way, shape, or form. You know, Sheldon Adelson has said that Palestinians do not exist. So, I mean, that is how the Trump administration has treated them. as well. I believe the ProPublica piece touched on the fact that Trump has advocated to the Japanese president, Shinzo Abe, that they should pass a bill to allow gambling in the country, and that that bill should benefit Sheldon Adelson's gambling company, which is, you know, that sort of, that this is the kind of stuff that this money buys you in these elections. And if the Republicans somehow manage to hold the House this election, I think that they have to thank, number one, Sheldon and Miriam Adelson for contributing over $100 million to their effort, even though while they're being outfunded in other areas by the Democrats.
This piece by Justin Elliott really is a must read. It's called Trump's Patron-in-Chief. Casino magnate Sheldon Adelson has never been more powerful. And he takes phone calls with Trump and has such an influence on the administration. I hope you can read that. So Sheldon Adelson is getting a lot of attention. What about the Koch brothers, Paul? What role are they playing in this election?
I mean, that's a very good question. And from what I can tell, they are still politically active, probably more so at the state and local level and on ballot initiatives. Mm-hmm. But they've really taken a step back in this Trump era. You know, they didn't particularly love Donald Trump. He didn't really align with their view of the future of conservatism and libertarianism, and so they've somewhat stepped back, but they're certainly out there supporting governors that they like Scott Walker in Wisconsin or Doug Ducey in Arizona, and you know, they're fighting ballot initiatives that attack the oil and gas industry, you know, that seek to establish climate change regulations, or in places like North and South Dakota, they are running campaigns against ballot initiatives that would create new bodies of ethics laws and campaign finance reforms that would reveal dark money in those states. So, I mean, they're still active, but it is at a much lower level than it was in 2012, 2014, and even in the 2016 election.
Well, the Associated Press reports that Charles and David Koch are planning to spend about $400 million on the midterms. Does that sound right to you?
I mean, from what I can tell from their organizations, they are not spending that much. I think that those reports also, you know, they may have been counting money that would go into spending on their political projects in general that aren't necessarily the elections. So they are still putting a lot of money into funding programs at universities to try to advance their beliefs of what economics should say and do and how it should be taught by, you know, funding schools at George Mason and Florida Atlantic University and other places like that.
Okay, yeah, because the New York Times has a piece, Charles Koch takes on Trump, Trump takes on Charles Koch, and they report that they're planning to spend $400 million on politics and policy. So they're spending a lot of money to try to get people convinced that the tax cut benefits everybody when we know that it doesn't. In fact, a lot of Republicans aren't even running on it because it did really just go to the very wealthy. Sheila, in your reporting this time around, did anything stand out for you when it comes to the Koch brothers and what they're spending?
Well, as Paul says, there are their activities and their money is so diversified. They're investing in so many ways, and I think the critical thing to remember for them is they have so much money and they have been investing hundreds of millions of dollars over so many years now that they're playing the long game. They may not be a fan of this president, and they may have problems with some of the political and policy directions that the Republican Party is taking this cycle, but they're still, first of all, the top dark money donor, organization that they're sponsoring is the top conservative dark money organization. Americans for Prosperity has spent almost $9 million, as reported to the FEC. I'm sure that figure will go much higher by the end of this cycle. So they are still among the top spenders supporting organizations this cycle, but their network is unparalleled. There is no other network as as broad. There is no other network with reach as deep as theirs, either on the left or the right. They've been investing, as I say, heavily over time, developing a lot of nodes on a pretty sophisticated network of organizations, both political and, as Paul says, investing in university programs and nonprofits, in dark money funded policy organizations at the state and federal level. So I think they're a force to be reckoned with and one that will be with us for years to come.
Sheila Krumholz is Executive Director of the Center for Responsive Politics. Paul Blumenthal is a reporter with the Huffington Post. Today we are following the money. The Center for Responsive Politics projects that total spending on next week's elections will reach $5.2 billion, making it the most expensive midterm ever. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about some of the more competitive races in the House and the Senate. Which races will determine control of the legislature, and where do candidates stand on crucial issues? Another really important question we will ask tomorrow is, what happens if Democrats lose the House and the Senate? A lot of people say that the next 2 years will be much more intense than the last 2 years, talking about everything from tax cuts to rollbacks to, as Steve Bannon said, deconstructing the administrative state. So that's a really important question that we're also going to ask tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're following the money. The Center for Responsive Politics projects total spending on next week's elections will reach $5.2 billion, once again breaking records, making it the most expensive midterm ever. The difference this time is that Democrats have caught up. We're talking about this with Sheila Krumholz, Executive Director of the Center for Responsive Politics, and Paul Blumenthal, a reporter at Huffington Post. Let's talk a little bit about specific races that are getting a lot of attention. The contentious race for governor in Florida, Democrat Andrew Gillum and Republican Ron DeSantis. This race has gotten ugly with a lot of racist ads and racist remarks. They talked about this at the debate. And McClatchy reports that George Soros and Tom Steyer have spent millions backing Gillum, and Illinois Republicans Richard Uihlein and Kenneth Griffin have backed DeSantis, matching them dollar for dollar. What strikes you about the money going to this race, Paul? And if you have been following this at all, can you talk maybe about a few issues? Because I feel like we hear so much about these candidates, but what's missing is, where do they really stand on issues?
I mean, on this race, I guess for the money, I haven't been following it so closely. Florida also, they don't really have campaign contribution limits, so for their state level races, so the candidates can raise unlimited sums from whomever. And in this case, I mean, you have Andrew Gillum, who was the progressive mayor of Tallahassee, and you know, he wasn't really supposed to win the Democratic primary, and sort of came out of nowhere to win the Democratic nomination. And then Ron DeSantis, who basically based his entire primary campaign on that he is the most like and loves Donald Trump the most of any Republican, and got an endorsement from Donald Trump. And, you know, he was seen as the most fringe potential candidate for the Republicans in this race, which is really made it a difficult one for them for an office that they've held for so long, going back. I mean, I can't even remember the last Democrat to hold the office. I guess there was Jeb Bush and Charlie Crist, who is now a Democrat, and then Rick Scott, who's running for Senate. So this is a race with probably the largest difference between the two candidates, maybe in the country. Where you have a very progressive mayor in Andrew Gillum and an incredibly conservative, very Trumpy Republican congressman, Ron DeSantis, running on the other side.
And what stands out for you, Sheila? The Tampa Bay Times had a headline that says, in the race for Florida governor, it's a billionaire and mostly millionaires. So, I mean, you have just so much money flowing into this race. Does anything stand out for you?
Well, unfortunately, the Center for Responsive Politics tracks money in federal politics, but we see, you know, we all are seeing the huge sums being invested in some of these most competitive gubernatorial races across the country, and it's very similar in terms of the makeup of the money, big money, a lot of money from the major donors who are giving nationally, sending money, directing money to some of the most competitive races at the state level. This is, after all, you know, these are critical races for establishing the political path forward, and in terms of the legislature, state legislature is, of course, critical for redistricting debates in the years ahead, which will have certainly an enormous impact on the federal level. So big money, very similar in patterns to what we're seeing at the national level, major players giving millions of dollars at multiple levels because, of course, they have the funds, and in those states, as Paul says, where there are low or no limits, rather few or no limits, they are able to pack a pretty powerful punch.
What are the rules around out-of-state giving? The Herald Times analysis of Florida state campaign finance records found that more than half of the $33 million Andrew Gillum has raised for his campaign has come from out of the state. Stacey Abrams in Georgia has raised most of her cash from out-of-state donors. So what are the rules around that, Sheila?
There are no rules in terms of where they can get their money from. And as candidates who've become a cause celeb for the parties, especially in the sense that this election season has very much become a referendum on the 2016 presidential election, it is not at all surprising that there would be money crossing state lines to find its way to those campaigns of candidates who are seen as taking the fight to the Trump administration and holding the line in their state for the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. Similarly, naturally, there is money crossing state lines to go to the Trump-endorsed candidates, those candidates of the very conservative wing of the Republican Party, who, or at least the Trump wing of the Republican Party, who are aligning themselves very vocally with Trump and are reaping in the financial benefits because of it. I have not heard that they are gaining similar traction with small donors that Gillum and Abrams might, but there is no nothing to prevent donors across the country from giving small donations, certainly, and in some cases very large donations to candidates that have nothing to do with their state or district. The critical thing, though, about outside money, or rather out-of-state money, is that that represents money, yes, and that's important for any campaign, but it does not represent votes. And that can be a pretty rude awakening on election day when the candidate, like John Ossoff, speaking of Georgia, who has raised the most money in their campaign from donors across the country, had not gathered enough support from those who are actually able to cast a vote for him on election day.
I mean, it's just amazing when you look at these numbers. So in Georgia, where Democrat Stacey Abrams is running against Republican Brian Kemp, another race that so many people are watching because she could become the first black governor in the country, the first black governor ever. That's about $56 million so far, not counting spending from third-party groups. And then here in California, you've got Gavin Newsom, who, according to the LA Times' latest numbers, a whopping $53 million. How is this money being spent? Is that another? Can we track that, Sheila? Like, how much do they spend on TV ads? How much are their consultants making? I mean, there was a lot of criticism of how the Democrats spent their money in the presidential election. They spent so much money on expensive consultants in some states rather than on the ground grassroots organizing. So is there any way to track the money and find out how it's being spent?
Yes, I'm I'm less familiar with what they've been doing on expenditures, but the National Institute on Money in Politics at followthemoney.org does track money in state elections for all 50 states. But my sense at the kind of most broad level is that it mirrors the kind of patterns of spending at the federal level, which is in the earliest months and even off election year of a campaign, the candidates are generally investing in operations, in overhead, in salaries, administration, setting up their field operations, and getting organized, as well as, of course, fundraising, which continues throughout the entire election cycle. But then as the days creep closer toward the election, the spending shifts to media. And so we're certainly seeing that at the national level this cycle, whereby the spending on media has already outpaced spending or is creeping up on the total cost of spending on media from the last midterm election cycle. It's nearing $1 billion.
Wow.
And so we're seeing that shift from kind of getting organized to now focusing on messaging, much more of which is being invested online. In the most competitive races, TV is still critical, and millions will be invested there, but we're seeing growth in spending online already on Facebook. Political ads on Facebook total more than $256 million just from the period May through October. So Facebook,
wow,
and other online platforms are getting an increasing share of the pie. But, Paul, I don't know if you have other resources for expenditures, focusing on categories of expenditures at the state level.
I'm not 100% sure on the state level. I mean, I presume that candidates continue to spend like they like the federal ones do on television. And I mean, the 2018 election is, you know, breaking a record for the amount of money being spent on television advertising, as you would expect. I mean, most Americans still get their news from television. You know, that's, people like to watch TV every night after work. It's a very popular hobby, I guess you could call it. And that's one of the better ways to reach voters. And we've seen, you know, more spending on television this election than in previous elections. There's about a similar amount of negative advertising at the federal level as there was in previous elections, but in total volume, there's more television advertising. And, you know, that might be viewed as a bad thing, but what, you know, one of the reasons behind that is that there are more candidates running in more races, and there are more competitive races than ever before. I mean, we're talking about around 90 competitive House races right now. Democrats have fielded candidates in every single House district, something they've never done before, at least not in the modern political era. And so, you know, a lot of those candidates are raising far more money than they should be based on the competitive level of their election, and so they're spending that money a lot. You know, one way to reach voters is through television advertising. I'm not so sure about how much is being spent on field operations, which are usually done in tandem with their political party, especially if the party determines that that candidate has a decent shot of winning. But I mean, that's sort of we're 6 days out from the election. We're in the phase where most of the money is going towards get out the vote operations, you know, last minute contacts, door knocking, block walking, and any kind of mailings and TV ads that might complement that kind of get out the vote effort. And I presume that's what a smart state level candidate is going to be spending their money on.
Hmm. Paul Blumenthal is a reporter with the Huffington Post, and Sheila Krumholtz is executive director of the Center for Responsive Politics. They project that total spending on next week's elections will reach $5.2 billion. billion dollars, once again breaking records. If you have any questions for Paul or Sheila about money and politics, I mean, what are your thoughts about this? We do shows about money and politics regularly, and we're always saying, once again, a record has been broken. This time around, the Democrats have reached parity with Republicans. Usually Republicans raise more money from massive, massive donors. So what are your thoughts on this? The Democrats tend to raise more money from small donors, but this time around, they are getting millions from Michael Bloomberg and Tom Steyer. And on the Republican side, it's Sheldon Adelson. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. And if you have any questions or comments about money and politics, if you're working on a campaign to take money out of politics, or if you have an example of maybe you've lived in another country where this just doesn't happen, we'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about what's happening in Texas. That has been fascinating to watch. The Dallas News just came out with a story. The title is Beto O'Rourke has raised twice as much cash as Ted Cruz. In his bid to unseat Ted Cruz in the Senate, Beto O'Rourke, who's an El Paso congressman, this is incredible. He has raised more than $70 million, more than any other Senate candidate in history. And last night he was on MSNBC doing a town hall at the University of Houston. He has just gotten a ton of media attention. More than 46% of Beto O'Rourke's money is coming from individual contributions of less than $200. He is not taking any PAC money. Paul, what stands out for you about all of this money that Beto O'Rourke has raised?
I mean, the thing that stands out the most is the small donor contributions. He's raised, I believe, $31 million in contributions under $200.
Wow.
So I mean, he really has just a huge amount of support. He's really caught fire, especially nationally. So I guess, you know, we talked about, or Sheila talked about, you know, John Ossoff running in Georgia and raising a ton of national small dollar money and then losing the election. You know, I think even if Beto O'Rourke loses this election by only a few points, that's a huge accomplishment for, you know, Texas is not generally viewed as a Democratic state. You know, in a lot of ways, this money, depending on how it's spent, could really transform the future of the Democratic Party in Texas by being spent to register voters, get them out to the polls, and make them, you know, more regular part of the electoral process. Texas has one of the worst voter turnouts in the country, you know, maybe even behind California. And a lot of that is due to low voter turnout among Latinos and other, you know, Democratic-leaning groups. And, you know, from what I gather and have read, the O'Rourke campaign is spending a lot of its time and money on getting these people out to vote, and early voting numbers in Texas are already showing explosive growth in voting since 2014 among Black, Latino, and young voters in Texas.
Right. According to reports, Beto O'Rourke is really betting on social media. He has spent $5.4 million on Facebook ads, which is more than the next five biggest spenders paid for Facebook combined. He's also spending over $1.3 million on Google ads. I mean, every time I log on, I see an ad for Beto O'Rourke. So he's definitely trying to get, you know, college students, young people, he's trying to grab them on social media.
So I guess my understanding of social media spending is usually if you see a candidate spending high amounts of money on social media, a lot of that are asks for small donations. So it sort of supplements, it's like being sent an email where they're asking you for money, but in this case they're reaching people through Facebook or Instagram or Google. And so that I think that that is it's part of their small donor fundraising campaign. Is this
right.
High spend on Facebook?
And as you said, so much of Beto O'Rourke's money is coming from small donors. I mean, a lot of these Democrats are getting money from small donors, whereas Republicans are getting their money from, you know, the groups that often give money, the Chamber of Commerce, the Koch brothers, Sheldon Adelson. And in this race, talk about differences. I mean, Beto O'Rourke is not taking any money from PACs. And at last night's town hall, he said, too many Democrats are beholden to big money. We have to return to the people. He's also on the complete opposite side of Ted Cruz on health care and women's rights. Beto O'Rourke said, when I talk about leading the way on universal health care, I'm also talking about health care, meaning every woman makes her own decisions about her own body, which in 2018 is very important. We should also note, and we talked about this yesterday, if you have any friends or family or know anyone in Texas, let them know that there's some problems with voting there. I mean, the officials say it's not the machines. Activists say, yes, these machines have had problems for a decade. We need to go back to paper ballots. But people are finding that when they vote straight ticket, the Senate vote changes. So people who vote for all Democrats find that their Senate vote on the machine says Ted Cruz. So tell people about this. They need to make sure they press the right buttons. And Paul, the same thing is happening in Georgia. It's like, why are we still dealing with these problems? A lot of people say we need to go back to paper.
I mean, whenever I vote, I tend to use the paper ballot. I don't know why a lot of the voting machines in this country don't at least have a backup paper printing system so that they can be, there can be a physical copy to check the votes against if there are any irregularities. But apparently many states don't even have that. It's a good question.
And we have an email from Manuel in Fairfax who says the Democratic Party has raised the significant majority of their total from individuals. The majority of Republican totals are from large donors and PACs. This is not the same thing. Sheila, I mean, we've talked about this for years. The media like to say that Tom Steyer and the Koch brothers are kind of the same, which is definitely not true. But what are your thoughts about this? When you look at the candidates raising the majority of their money from individuals versus large donors and PACs?
The truth is that the vast majority of candidates on both sides of the aisle have heretofore raise the vast majority of their money from individuals giving more than $200. So we're not talking hundreds of millions of dollars, but it's more than most Americans can afford to invest on politics. And so even Beto O'Rourke, who's done so well with raising about $32 million from small donors, that's 46% of his total take, he still raised more from individuals giving more than $200. That's $38 million, or about 55%. So those able to give hundreds or even a couple thousands of dollars to a campaign are making up ultimately a larger portion. It would be healthier for our democracy. It would engage more people if more Americans gave small amounts of money to the campaigns of their choosing. That would represent really a healthier democracy, a stronger democracy. If people were getting engaged and giving a contribution, is a perfectly legitimate way of doing that, or one, you know, legitimate way. But it's very difficult. It's very rare that a campaign, that a candidate is able to attract sufficient funds from enough donors giving small amounts to fund a viable campaign. So we're talking, you know, last cycle, $1.5 million for a winning House seat, over $11 million for a winning Senate seat. This cycle, with the money going through the roof, I think both are likely to go higher. There is more success among Democrats this cycle with raising small, large amounts of small donations. But it's very difficult to replicate the kind of rock star status that Beto O'Rourke, or in past campaigns, Barack Obama or Bernie Sanders, were able to create to really fund, substantially fund the bulk of their campaigns.
Well, and this is one of the problems. We only have a couple minutes left, but let's say you're a first-time candidate and you're running against someone established. I mean, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I mean, that was an amazing thing to watch, because she was outspent by the machine, but she still won. But that's pretty rare. I mean, if you're a first-time candidate and you run against the machine, You really, until the system is totally reformed, you don't have any choice but to try to raise a lot of money because, as you said, you have to have a ground game, you have to pay for signs, you have to pay your staff. So at this point, I mean, that's the reality that we're living in, right, Sheila? And you do have a report that found that Democratic women are outraising men among female donors, another record-breaking first. But for first-time candidates, it's pretty overwhelming.
It is, and that's one of the big challenges and weaknesses of our system is that it is so unequal. You have to swim in these affluent circles or have access to big cash or people with a lot of cash if you're going to be financially viable. But money isn't everything. You also need all the other facets of a strong campaign, including great ideas and connection with the voters, charisma, hustle, a good campaign organization. So those candidates who are going to rely on the money as a panacea are going to be disappointed on election day. You do need money, and some candidates are able to break through and raise really substantial sums from lots of small donations. That would be healthier if we could figure out a way to make that more common.
And just 1 minute left, or even 30 seconds, Sheila, since it's Halloween, I have to share something pretty scary that I found on your website. Donald Trump's 2020 campaign has already raised $100 million.
Yes.
I mean, this is amazing. As you point out, that this time when Obama was in office, he raised only $4 million, and Trump has raised $100
million? Yes, this president has been gunning for re-election day ever since election day in 2016.
Wow.
So we're in uncharted territory. It's going to be a gonzo, kind of money bomb of an election this time, and I'm sure 2020 is going to be even scarier, as you say.
Wow. Sheila Krumholz is executive director of the Center for Responsive Politics, and they project that the midterms, the spending on midterms will reach $5.2 billion, making it the most expensive midterm ever. Paul Blumenthal is a reporter at the Huffington Post, where he extensively covers these issues. Sheila and Paul, thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about the races that will determine control of the legislature, and we'll talk about where candidates stand on crucial issues. Thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for running the board, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.